The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 442. On today's podcast, Tony Menini of Asia Met Resources. I've talked about Asia Met before several times. I do hold stock in them, and I think they have potential. And they've done quite well of late. And I as I chat to Tony, I'm up about 100% on them. But there's still plenty of potential there, as he says. And as I believe, he's been right so far. Not only in this company, in previous companies he's run. So listen to this. If you've never heard of Asia Met Resources before, listen to it. It's worth listening to. Also on the podcast, Alan Green talks about Couves, which I also hold stock in. I see potential there, you know. Also mentions Tertiary Minerals and the Watchstone Group. And by all means, if you like the podcast, if you enjoy it, if you get any value from it, please click the link here at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click the blog there. There's a link there to iTunes. And if you give me a 5-star rating and review, I will mention you on the podcast.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Director, Chief Executive Officer and Deputy Chairman of Asia Met, ticker code ARS, Tony Menini. Thanks, Tony, for coming on.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, well, listen, I've got to thank you first and foremost. Last time I had you on the podcast, I did say, Tony, I bought some shares for my father and my brother in their ISA accounts. I said, and I did say to you, is this a good move? You said yes. And as to, I think, looking at the share price yesterday, they're close to 100% up now.
Yeah, no, we've had a very nice move over the past couple of weeks. You know, very pleased with that. But I guess, you know, we've got a long way to go. I still think it's, you know, the stock's very undervalued. We've got the PEA coming out shortly, which I think will, we expect to, you know, clearly demonstrate, the value inherent in the company. You know, that's on really the first project, BKM. And then we've got, a lot to come beyond that.
Yeah, well, do you know what? You partly answered my second question there. I was going to say, is there more to come? Is there more upside to come? And you truly believe there is, yeah?
Yeah, look, Justin, I think it's, that's very clear. I mean, we're only just at the beginning here. You know, as we discussed last time and as I've sort of clearly articulated a number of times, you know, we're on a substantial growth path here with Asia Met. So we've got the BKM project. You know, we've got the first resource on that. We've updated that resource. We've done MET studies. We've done mining studies. And we've got the PEA coming out very shortly. The PEA will clearly demonstrate, you know, the value inherent in this BKM project. We'll look to sort of push that forward through feasibility, get that into production as quickly as we can, talking about 20,000 tonnes of copper cathode per annum. But sitting behind that, Justin, we've got, you know, the very large Bootong project. It's got, you know, around 3 million tonnes of contained copper, 2 million ounces of gold. So we're really at the start of growing a substantial business here over, you know, the medium to long term. So, you know, we've come a short way, but really just at the beginning.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the start. For people listening right now, I mean, obviously I know about Asia Met because I'm invested. There's a lot of people who are keen to have you on the podcast again because they're invested. But for people who don't know anything about Asia Met, so let's take it through. So you essentially have three assets there in Indonesia, is that right?
That's correct. So we've got three assets in Indonesia. We've got a project called BKM, which is on Kalimantan copper. And that's the one I was referring to, getting that through feasibility into production quickly at an anticipated rate of 20,000 tonnes of copper production per annum. We then have a second very large growth option in copper and gold called Bootong on the northern end of Sumatra Island. That project is at the scoping study stage, and we're currently converting the license from a exploration license to a production license. And then we have a third project, which is in the far eastern part of Kalimantan. It's a small gold, non-core gold project. I refer to it as a non-core because it's a very good project in its own right, it doesn't have the scale that the other two projects have. and hence our real core focus is on copper. And the first project that we're looking to get up and running is the BKM project.
Okay, and so the BKM project, you said we're going to be seeing soon a PEA, which is a preliminary economic assessment. And so what does that do, Tony? What happens when that comes out? What do we see? What's the result of that?
Yeah, look, the PEA, a very important milestone for the company, Justin. All the work that we've done to date and all the news releases that you've seen from AsiaMet over the past 12 to 18 months have really been around the technical aspects of the BKM project. The PEA, Preliminary Economic Assessment, is really the first time that we'll have some financials around this project. So we've done a lot of hard work getting the metallurgical test work done, and that's continues to this day. We've got mining studies, we've got infrastructure, logistics, all the inputs that go into build a financial model, which we can then look at a production schedule, cash flows, and value, inherent in the project. So we're looking at numbers, the net present value of the project, the internal rates of return of the project. We're looking at the capital cost of the project, the operating cost of the project, the payback period for the project. So all the financial parameters that drive an operating mine, this is the first time that we'll see those. And, given the characteristics of the BKM project, we expect these to, be very attractive.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, and this, the PEA, is that undertaken by an independent body? Or
the PEA, we are using a group of consultants, some of the best in the industry. There's a core group of them who are looking at there's what we've got expertise in mining, we've got expertise in metallurgy, we're using specialists in Indonesia for logistics and infrastructure, geology, resources, mine planning, so all the different aspects. We've got independent third party consultants, some of the best in the industry. We've been in this business for 30 years. We've done this many times in the past. So, we know who's who in the zoo, and we know who the go-to people are to, get the real expertise needed to put together a solid study and hence a solid foundation to take the project forward.
Yeah, so what are you hopefully looking at? I mean, you mentioned there 20,000. So take us through the figures. For a layman, how much, if you're doing 20,000 a year, how much is that going to generate, hopefully at this current price level of copper? How much money would that generate a year?
Yeah, look, Justin, we're talking 20,000 tonnes of copper per annum. If you translate that to pounds, that's around 44 million pounds of production per year. We're looking at a project which, because of its characteristics, it's very shallow, it's got good grade, it's leachable, and hence we can produce pure copper metal at the site, and the infrastructure and logistics are good. We can produce copper for very low cash costs, and so if you think somewhere in the order of a dollar margin, copper price today, $2.30, forecast to be better than that going forward, but let's talk a dollar margin, 44 million pounds, that's $44 million of EBITDA. So, you can put some simple metrics around that in terms of what these companies with these types of assets are valued at. Somewhere in the order of sort of 7x earnings, and you can do the maths. These are very attractive numbers, and, hence the reason that we're, very optimistic about the outlook for this BKM project.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the market cap, and it's at the moment it's about 15 million, and so you can see that the potential there, it's a lot of upside, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I just some metrics around that. I've just given you a few numbers there to work with, Justin, and you can sort of see the upside potential in terms of the valuation. But, if you look at some market comps, for example, if we take AsiaMet sitting at 15 million pounds, at the PEA stage with a 20,000 ton project. There's another company who's a little bit further advanced than us in Indonesia, Finders Resources. It's got a market cap of 50 million pounds and it's around the same scale project. And then we look at an operator, it's in development. So we're PEA, Finders is actually in development, constructing its project. And then you go to someone like Central Asia, who is, you know, has about 11,000 tonnes of annual capacity and its market cap is, you know, 180 million pounds. So, you know, I think you can see going from, you know, where we are now through the development and into operations, the potential uplift is, very large.
Yeah, and I suppose when the PEA comes out, that in itself is also, you know, I mean, because I've seen broker notes out saying, you know, at the moment valuing you at 9 pence a share and you're only about 2.6 pence a share. But when the PEA comes out, that in itself will add value, won't it?
Oh, absolutely. Because when the PEA comes out, you're going to see the net present value of the cash flows of the project. So, you know, that's going to give you a very clear mark of what the value of this project is at a certain copper price and a certain production scale. So 20,000 tonnes at a copper price where we forecast the copper price going forward, you'll get a net present value of the project and you'll be able to sort of look at that net present value and, you know, obviously compare and contrast that with, you know, the current market cap of the company.
Yeah, and I think you were spot on the money, because, I mean, a while back, I remember when I first invested, you were doing sort of presentations, and I saw you do a video saying, listen, we are right now at the bottom of the cycle as far as commodity prices are concerned, and copper it specifically. And you said we're sort of oversupplied. By the time we're in production, that'll be changed. It'll be a deficit in the market because lots of copper producers are shutting down operations. And it looks like we have. I mean, at the time when you were doing this presentation, the copper price was still going down. But it looks like we bottomed, doesn't it?
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. And, you know, as I've said a number of times over the past 12, 18 months, and I think I've been very consistent in this, Justin, in that the copper price is really behaving exactly as we would have anticipated it to behave. So it looks like it's got down to around the $2 level. It's bottomed out there. It's now picked up. It's now around $2.30. If we look at, you know, the supply side, this year there was a 500,000 tonne surplus forecast. That surplus has come in at around 250, about half of what was anticipated. The copper price is continuing to strengthen. And as we sort of forecast forward, one of the things that, you know, I've been sort of, I guess, forecasting is the timing, you know, with respect to the BKM project coming online is really at a time where in 2018-19, when the copper market is anticipated to, you know, be a lot stronger than it is today. And everything, all the indications are trending that way. So, you know, the timing, I think, is really perfect for us to be taking the project quickly through feasibility and getting it into construction and operation in time for that strong uptick in the copper cycle. And, you know, there's, you know, most of the major companies and most of the forecasters in the copper space are very bullish on the outlook for copper in that time frame.
Yeah, I've been seeing quite a few articles saying hedge funds are now going long copper, which is a good sign, I suppose. But so we've got the PEE. First of all, when do we expect that out? And then when are you aiming for production?
Yeah, so the PEA, Justin, we said, by the end of the first quarter. We're getting very close to the end of the first quarter, so we're not far away. We've got all the inputs coming together now. We're working very hard over the next week and a bit, and we anticipate that we'll be right at the end of the quarter or very close to it. So that's where we are. Sorry, Justin, the second part of the question?
So ultimately, production-wise, when are you, what's the target for production to start production?
Yeah, so we're looking, you know, we're looking at essentially we've got a 9 to 12 month feasibility, and then we go into construction, which is probably around about 18 months. So we're looking, you know, for first production sort of about two and a bit years out from now.
Okay. So it looked like hopefully, you know, the sweet spot, you'll be hitting the sweet spot copper price wise then. But listen, this broker note that I saw, 9 pence, that essentially was just based on the BKM asset. And so, you know, that's without mentioning Bootong and July, the gold asset. So, you know, the size of Bootong is a lot bigger than BKM, isn't it?
Oh, Bootong's very large. It's probably 5 or 6 times larger in terms of contained copper metal as the BKM project. I should just say, Justin, the BKM project currently stands at about 400,000 tonnes of copper, or about 800-900 million pounds of copper. There's still a lot of upside to come at BKM itself, but we also have right next door to BKM, we have the BKS and the BKW targets. We've already put some holes in there. We're seeing very similar copper mineralization grades, thicknesses to BKM. So we're very optimistic that we can continue to grow the resource base at the BK project itself. Back to Bootong. Bootong, very large project. 3 million tonnes of contained copper, you know, 6 billion pounds of contained copper. It has 2 million ounces of resource. It's still open in multiple directions. So there's ample opportunity to continue to grow that resource. It's got excellent nearby infrastructure. Look, there's very few projects of this asset quality sitting anywhere in the world that are so well located as this one. And, you know, we're 55 kilometres from the coast and a hop, skip and jump from the main consumer market in Asia. So, you know, this is a big opportunity for us. The production scale here could be, you know, 4 or 5 times larger than the production scale at BKM. It's a big project. It's going to, you know, we've got to systematically work through, de-risk it and develop it over time off the back of, you know, the BKM development, cash flow, operations, and then growth through Bootong.
Okay, and obviously, July, the gold asset there, what's the plans for that? Because it seems to me it's not really a priority at the moment. What are the plans for that?
Yeah, look, I did, I referred to it a little earlier as non-core, and I guess, you know, with that profile that I just gave you on our BKM and our Bootong project. The July project, nice gold project, had some very good results, not far away from having resources on it, but we expect those to be, you know, relatively modest size resources, a few hundred thousand ounces. So we'll look to concentrate on our core copper projects, and we'll look to, so in respect of July, you know, we've clearly stated that we'll look to monetize that as a non-core asset to bring the funding back into the company to continue to fund our ongoing feasibility study and to progress the BKM project. So we're currently converting the license at July from an exploration license to a production license. And at the point in time that we have the production license, you know, we'll be looking to monetize, you know, that asset and recycle the funds back into continuing to build the copper business.
And by monetize, you mean a possible sale of that, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, all right, excellent. So, so the PEA is next, and then in between sort of, so what news can we expect after the PEA, which is coming up very soon, like I said, end of this quarter? What happens after that?
Yeah, so PEA comes out, and then post the PEA, assuming that it meets all our expectations, which we're very confident it will, we will immediately push into feasibility studies. So the long lead time items for the feasibility studies, continued metallurgical test work for the heap leach, very critical. We'll be optimising some of the work that we've done in the PEA to fine-tune, you know, the mining, the the infrastructure requirements and various other components, and we'll gradually ramp up the feasibility studies as the year goes forward. So continued news flow from that ongoing work happening at BKM. We would anticipate that during the year that we will do some additional drilling on the BKS and BKW targets. So some exciting upside drilling happening. We will also, obviously, I've spoken about, the Bouton project in terms of getting that production license in place. Once we've got that production license in place, then we'll look to be doing some work on Bouton to continue to de-risk that project and progress it along the curve. So, a lot going on, Justin, both at BKM, at Bouton, and obviously we've already spoken about July. And then there's other things that we're actively working on in a corporate sense. So, potential partnering at the project level at BKM, potential partnering at the project level at Bouton. So, a number of different corporate initiatives sort of ongoing there on both of those projects to continue, to develop the assets and push them forward towards production.
Yeah, and the estimated mine life of BKM, what is it?
Yeah, look, at the moment, assuming it's 20,000 tonnes per annum, we'd be looking at something in the order of around 10 years of mine life. But as I alluded to, we're very confident that we can extend that mine life because of what we've already seen with the drilling at BKS and the BKW target right next door, a large target that looks very similar to BKM. We don't even have a drill hole in there yet, so... we're very confident we can expand the resources there and grow the potential mine life for that BKM project. It's got a good solid mine life, but very confident we can grow that through further exploration and resource development work.
Yeah, and some people listening may not know of your background, and so we should touch upon that because one of the things that drew me to yourself and investing in you was your background with Oxiana. And this is a phenomenal figure, essentially. And when I read that, I thought it was a misprint. But is it sort of true you took that from around about circa sort of $3 million, dollars worth to a value of around about $5-6 billion?
Yeah, that's correct, Justin. So that business kicked off as a junior explorer back in the early 2000s, and essentially over the next 8 years, we grew that business to a $6.5 billion market cap company with four mining operations, producing around 200,000 tons of copper a year and a couple of 100,000 ounces of gold a year, plus some zinc and silver and other commodities. So large business, four operations and a new mine development, and essentially, $3 million to $6.5 billion over that 8 year period. So, we've got here at AsiaMet, we've actually got a really strong underlying asset base. So, we've run through that today. We've got BK project, BKM, BKS, BKW. Great starter project, 20,000 tonnes of copper a year, the ability to grow that over time, and a huge growth option, in Bouton. So, we've got the asset base fundamentally there. We've got the team, we've got a very strong team. The people in the team, have worked with me over a long period of time. We'll continue to pull in consultants and expertise as we grow the business. And, we're looking to, really grow a substantial Asian-focused copper and gold business here. And we've got the asset base, to build on. So assets, people, the wherewithal, the experience to do it. We've done it plenty of times before.
Yeah, well, listen, at an investor event a while back last year, I met with Stephen there, and Stephen. So, what's Stephen's director in the company, isn't it? Stephen Hughes.
Yeah, Steve's the director and the vice president of exploration. So he's based up in Jakarta. He's been in Indonesia for 20 years. He previously worked for Freeport for around 12 to 14 years of his career. Very, very experienced Indonesian hand, very experienced in big copper projects, big copper companies. So Steve runs the operations on the ground in Indonesia. He's supported by a fellow by the name of Mansour Geiger, who is one of the founding members of the precursor company, Kalimantan, which became AsiaMet. And Mansour looks after all the government and community relations. Steve looks after the operational side of the business. And we have a very strong Indonesian national team, which work together with the guys. So, you know, together with the consultants that I referred to and, you know, various other expertise that we can pull in, you know, we've got a very, very strong core team. And, Steve and Mansour are, you know, the key guys that get the work done on the ground in Indonesia.
Yeah, well, he had a lot of good things to say about you. And he said, so what's the deal here? And he said, well, I'm working with Tony. I like working with Tony. He's a good guy to work with and he knows his stuff. And it seems like because of, you know, what you've done in the past, there are a lot of people, you know, who trust in what you're doing. And I mean, a while back when you did a fundraise, a lot of people, you know, you raised money with were quite high net worth individuals. And so you have that network, don't you, of people who almost were with you in the last project, not maybe operationally, but financially as well, that are still there for this project. Is that right?
Yeah, look, I'm glad you raised that, Justin. We because of that past history, you know, not only with Oxiana, but with a number of other developments over the time, you know, we have a very supportive base of, you know, high net worths. And I think you've seen that over the past 18 months, you know, since I took over as the CEO of AsiaMet. You know, we've been able to put together funding at good prices, always at market, not at discounts to market. We've put the money together. It's gone into sticky hands, high net worths, ultra high net worth individuals who've got a long-term, you know, medium to long-term outlook. They're looking to support the growth of the business over a period of time, support me, support the team. And those people are there. They're continuing to accumulate their positions. They're continuing to add to their holdings. They're soaking up some of the loose stock that's been in the market. So, you know, we're in a very good position from that perspective, you know, and I think you at the start suggested that anyone who participated in the initial couple of placements that we've made, you know, you're 100% up on your money. So people are very happy with that performance to date. But as I said, really only the start. And, you know, this particular group of investors and shareholders, they understand the value creation exercise that we're looking to undertake here, you know, replicate the type of, you know, the type of value creation that you know, was undertaken at Oxiana and various other, you know, ventures and endeavours that I've been involved with over time. And, you know, one of those is, you know, you can take a look, is called NextGen Energy. It's a company that we founded a few years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago. We put the first few million dollars into that company. It's now got a market cap of around 400 million. It's listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange. And, you know, over the last 4 years, we've essentially, you know, seeded that with the first few million dollars, grown a 400 million market cap company over the last 4 years. So, you know, we've got the potential inside AsiaMet to do exactly the same sort of thing. This, you know, our investors and supporters understand that. And they're there, you know, really for that, you know, value creation exercise, given the asset base we've got and the people we've got. So all in very good shape to do the same again.
Yeah, I think it's right. You mentioned there, ultra high net worth. And that's true, because I was reading up on some of them, and they're not just, you know, millionaires. These people are close to billionaires. And so, and that's important in this day and age. When you're at the bottom of a cycle like this, you know, and funding is hard for most junior resource companies, to have those people there, you know, helps the project along. Like you said, this is the time to create, you know, great values when you're at the bottom of a cycle, because, you know, the prices, commodity prices can only sort of go up from here. So, marvellous, Tony. I think we've covered a lot there for, you know, investors in the company and for new people to look on. But if you could, Tony, just, you know, if people need more convincing, could you give us three reasons why an investor should put AsiaMet on their watch list, please?
So, Justin, I'll bracket them really assets and people. So, you know, I've covered a lot. Strong, very strong asset base, large projects, and a pipeline of projects which get into production and grow a serious business over time. So assets, really high quality assets, and that's, you know, fundamentally underlies everything else. We got the people. We've been through all that. So, you know, great people, very experienced, done it all before, very focused, working very hard to deliver for shareholders and continue to do that. It's in our DNA. That's what we do. It's what we love to do. And we're pushing very hard to grow this business. Timing could not be better. We've been through copper price bottom, coming off the bottom, starting to lift. We've got, you know, a runway in front of us for the development of the project, which should we should actually be producing at a time when the copper price is, you know, really in liftoff mode. So I think the timing's terrific. And then, you know, there's really, it's still, we're very early in the stages of this value creation exercise. So plenty of time to get on board. You know, get yourself a position and, you know, ride the value creation curve that we're on. And then the third thing's really, you know, is the value. You know, it's we are still, you know, our valuation, given the asset base, the people, the experience and everything that I've talked about today, the way the copper market's going, you know, our valuation's still ridiculously low. So, you know, I think... you know, there's been, you know, there's been about $80 million spent on these projects, and you can buy, you know, $80 million of sunk cost for 15 million pounds today. So, you know, there's not only, you know, you can't replace the work that's been done. So assets, people, value, timing.
Lovely. Well, Tony, it's lovely to talk to you. And, you know, using a couple of your phrases there, it's still time to get on the Tony train. Because he knows who's who in the zoo. And listen, Tony, I look forward to speaking to you again after, hopefully, the PEA comes out. And, you know, we can obviously take it from there. Thanks very much, Tony. Speak soon.
Thanks, Justin. Very much appreciated. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Brand Communications, Alan Green. How's it going, Al?
I'm good, Joss. How are you, mate?
I'm all right. And do you know what? The markets are feeling a bit more bullish, aren't they? They haven't, put it this way, there hasn't been as much volatility of late, has there?
Well, I think we're speaking after the dreadful tragic events in Belgium yesterday, and the markets have... are proving very resilient. I think we've had the move up to 6.2. It's holding on to that at the moment. This is a major technical benchmark for the index. And I think if we can see the index close out this week at or above this level, then we were well placed for a push higher. So perhaps the old adage, go away in May, won't apply this year.
Yeah, I'm thinking that, but I'm just thinking maybe we have a little rally and then all of a sudden the Brexit kicks in, the uncertainty around that, and then we maybe, you know, fall a little bit. But so I've got 1 foot in the bullish camp, 1 foot in the bearish camp, thinking, yeah, well, I don't know where it's going here. I'm not sort of taking funds off the table here. I've still got stocks in, I'm invested, I'm long pretty much,
yeah,
but I have some cash there, you know.
I'm the same. I'm the same. I'm mostly invested. I've got some cash here and some cash there, but I'm still mostly invested. I think, you see, the markets, as we know, hate uncertainty, and the 23rd of June referendum, that's the uncertainty that's really overhanging the markets at the moment. Now, okay, there are bull cases for if we leave, if we exit Europe, there are bull cases if we stay in. So my belief is that any hesitancy on the part of the markets at the moment to progress any further is largely down to the fact they don't know which way it'll go. Whichever way it goes, I think will probably be a good thing, certainly for the FTSE 100.
Yeah.
I don't think that the markets will fall back. I think once we know, then we will see a progression further over the summer, subject to the continued improvements in the economy. I think the index will continue to progress. You know, the home economy is in pretty good shape right now. You know, we're seeing George Osborne's had to trim some of his targets back slightly, but we're still growing at a good rate of knots. So
yeah,
I'm bullish longer term.
And do you know what? Every morning when I get up, I check out the overnight markets just in China and stuff.
Yep.
And I tweeted out, and I've noticed that there hasn't been anywhere near as much volatility there. So China is stabilizing, you know, the markets are. I know the stock market isn't a reflection of the economy like our, say, FTSE 250 or 350 is, because shares are not as widely held over there. But yeah, it's good to see some stability there anyway. And do you know what, though? You had a Freudian slip there. You said the referendum. And I'm thinking...
Referendum.
Yeah, but do you know what? Partly, it's a good slip there, because I think as we get towards it, the drum will be beat louder. We get more noise from the referendum. So it'll be interesting to see how that will affect the markets. As yet, it's still a kind of background thing in the news, you know? And I think when they start really campaigning and it's front top headline on the news, that's when it'll have a big effect, I think, you know?
I agree. I think we will see increased volatility in the run-up too. But whichever way it goes, and I think it's actually investors need to focus on this, because there are strong bull cases for an exit or for a staying in. And even if we do exit, a lot of the changes will take years to implement. So it won't be a sudden overnight change. I think there's a strong bull case for the UK economy to exit. There's a strong case to stay in too. So it's a win-win either way. And, you know, let's not forget the likes of Volkswagen and Renault, for instance, do huge amounts of business with the UK. They're not going to change the terms on which they sell us motor cars overnight, are they? You know, it's going to take a long time for any changes to come in. And I think once the uncertainty is out of the way, I do expect the index to progress further. And you know, I think we could be...
Rally to all-time highs.
Possibly, yeah. And also, you know, strengthening oil price as well. You know, we're seeing commodity prices strengthen, as you said just now. China, there's nowhere near the volatility that we were seeing sort of early on this year, end of last year. Commodity stocks are starting to strengthen. Commodity prices are starting to strengthen. So if we see that continued strengthening and we get our decision on the 23rd of June, then full steam ahead.
Yeah, cool. Okay, let's look at some individual stocks. And we should say, you know, even if it's a bear market, that just means the majority of stocks are going down, but there's always stocks you can make money on. And especially sometimes smaller companies, you know, they sometimes, if they have excellent, you know, fundamentals or something going on that's amazing, they won't, you know, toe the line with the market. They'll still rise, you know. So, so let's be a bit more optimistic, even if there is a bull market. So what are you looking at, Al?
Just revisiting a couple of stocks we've looked at in recent weeks, and then one that we looked at last year. Firstly, we spoke about Watchstone Group last week. This, of course, is the old Quindel. Mm-hmm. We spoke about the fact that they've... The professional services division was sold to Slater and Gordon. There are the companies being realigned. It's selling off, made two disposals this year of non-core businesses. After we spoke, they announced a management incentive and retention plan, which I found interesting. They're basing the value of the business on a market price of 250 pence per share, and we're currently sitting at about 214p. Rather than incentivize management with stock, they're actually incentivizing them with cash with cash, in that if the companies within the group retain the valuation of £2.50 per share, then the participants in the scheme, i.e. senior management, including Indra Mukherjee and the board, will be entitled to a total share of up to 9.5% of the growth in value of each division. So it's a solid cash bonus, and in a way it ascribes the value to the underlying businesses considerably ahead of where we are now at £2.50 a share. But clearly the benefits for the management team are that they're going to get a cash cut of the gains in those divisions going forward. So an interesting way to look at it, and one that doesn't necessarily relate to the share price. So it certainly had a positive effect on the share price when the announcement was made, which I think was a day or so after we spoke about it last week.
Okay, interesting. All right, WTG is the ticker there.
WTG.
Yeah, cool. Anything else to look at?
Yes, indeed. We spoke a few weeks ago about Tertiary Minerals. This is the company that has two developments. It has three projects mining fluorspar, which is the stuff that's in toothpaste. It's used in optics. It's used as flux for metal productions. It's got many, many applications, and it's one of the critical minerals highlighted by the Critical Raw Minerals Alliance in Europe. So fluorspar is part of that. The recent developments on for Tertiary Minerals, the epicode, of course, here is TYM, were that the mineralization of the mine in Nevada had increased to a substantial level, and they recently received a permit to carry on mining or to develop the mining at the Storuman project in Sweden. So they've got two major projects which are scheduled to produce an awful lot of fluorspar in the next few years, and the shares have moved. When we spoke, it was somewhere between a penny and a 1.4p. The shares have pushed ahead nicely since then, and we're currently looking at a share price of 2.2p, which still only gives the group a market cap of 4.6 million, as against where it's been previously, which is up around sort of 30, 40 million. So there's still some way to go on this, I believe, and still an awful lot of potential. And indeed, there's a proactive one-to-one event tonight in London, where Richard Clemmie, the managing director, will be presenting the progress to date and looking at the development schedule over the next few years.
Yeah, well, I had them on, and I put them on watch list because I was impressed by the asset there, and I had an end of close price alert for 1p, and it touched it but didn't really activate it, and then I thought, oh, that's interesting. That may be a support level edge, the round figure of 1p, you know. And since then, it shot up through the 20-day, 50-day, 125, and the 200-day moving average. And then all of a sudden, it sort of almost hit its head on that 200-day moving average. It's come back a little bit, but it's still above, you know, all three moving averages below that. And I think it could settle down there, ready for another consolidation and ready for another attempt at getting above that. But it literally, you know, more than doubled since a couple of weeks ago when I had him on the podcast. So that's definitely good move there. But more fuel in the tank to go, hopefully.
Definitely, and I'm going to be hearing quite a bit more from Tertiary, I'm sure, over the next few months. So this is a really interesting company, and really still at these levels, it's in my opinion significantly undervalued. But that's just my opinion, and obviously it's not. Investors should do their research on that.
Do your own research.
DYOR.
Yeah. What else are you looking at, Al?
Okay, this is an old friend. Well, it's probably not an old friend to people that invested higher like I did, and I sold out a while ago, but I've kept my eye on this. It's been on my watch list. This is the company Kooves. The epic code is KOOV, and this has come down from the heady heights of £1.50. It's drifted down. There have been various rights issues, and all the way through, the company has had to raise money and push on with this development. The good thing about Kooves is that it has a very, very good management team. It's if you like a mini ASOS The chairman is Lord Waheed Ali, ex-chairman of ASOS between 2000 and 2012. Robert Breedy, chief creative officer, also at ASOS. Mary Turner, non-exec of ASOS. And Coovers is simply developing an online offering for India. It's developed a website there and developed a business. Sales are developing and growing, but due to the burgeoning economy there and the growing economy, the cost of running the business there and indeed the cost of advertising to the market there have increased, and the company's had to raise money, and it recently raised a further $5 million. So Coovers is a company that I believe with its management in place is well positioned to deliver some growth going forward. But how long this will take, of course, is anybody's guess. It's had to raise a lot of money, and I think it's disillusioned a lot of investors in the process. But at some stage, this company is going to turn around, and it's got some great people involved. So the company's currently worth about $7 million. It's just raised, I think, about $5 million. And of course, it's really a question of how much more cash will it burn between now and the point at which the turnover and the profits start to come in, and the company can make its own way.
Well, do you know what? I know Coovers quite well because I know you had them on a while back, but I did buy some of these, and I bought them at, where did I buy it? 15p 75, 15 and three quarters. And what's the price now? It's around about that. I'm pretty much, even though it is, it's currently at that level. And I've done four reasons why on my blog there, why I bought this. And do you know, I'm just looking at the market cap. Yeah, that's right. So the market cap's only 3.8 million. And
3.8 million.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And do you know what? I like this. Like you said, the most successful stock ever on AIM is ASOS, right?
Yeah.
Or ASOS, or ASC. And it's not like if you'd invested a grand at the start there, you'd have £165,000 now. Yeah. And you know, and they don't pay a dividend. But I was looking at this. Like you said, the top three people there were the top three people at ASOS. They know what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
And ASOS are not. And if you look at Coovers' website, it's spot on for
it
ASOS.
Is, yeah.
Essentially, all you need to do is change the name to ASOS, it'd be exactly the same. And
yeah.
Like I said, they have outlined, you know, ambitious plans to raise like 35 million. That's the problem, I think. People see huge dilution here. But the revenues are amazing. They are like doubling every quarter, pretty much, the revenues. And it's,
well, they
it's,
are, yeah.
It's,
yeah.
It's phenomenal. And like you say, there is a lot of costs. And, you know, they have an advertising campaign. And the video I've got on my website there, I'll put the link actually under on the site there to my post. But I was very impressed with the advert. Very trendy, very up there. And I just think it's bringing this Western-style clothes, which, you know, the Indian market seemed to like, young Indians seem to like. And they have got a market there, but they realise they've got to raise money. And I just think these are people who've done it before. You know, and I know a lot of people, I posted this on Twitter, and someone said, listen, they've got to raise and dilute lots and lots of money. But they put themselves, they're going to raise, like I said, the management put $5 million in themselves.
Yeah,
so it's not like they're not just trying to, you know, shaft shareholders. They are, you know, they've got skin in the game themselves, and they know what they can do. They know what they're capable of, and I just think it's an excellent punt here. I really do. And it's not that they haven't got any revenue. They've got revenue growing, and like I said, it's a way up between the costs and the revenue, I know, but I do have faith in the management because they've done it before, you know?
Yeah, I think also a lot of, just to sort of look at a similar situation, I think a lot of investors thought when Fastjet started up and EasyJet took a stake in the business that eventually it would become an African subsidiary of EasyJet. And of course, the car crash that happened there is well documented, but I think some people are looking at Coovers and applying those parallels. But the difference is with Coovers is the management. It's the management team in place that are from ASOS, and sure, you know, they've got challenges. It's a burgeoning economy over there. It's growing quickly. The cost of advertising are a factor there because where they were, the costs they were paying out a few years ago have doubled, trebled in many cases, in order that they can market the business successfully. But it's paying off. As you said, the revenues are doubling every quarter pretty well. And pretty soon the company will reach break even and will move into profit. And at that point, you know, we're going to see ASOS-like growth, I think, at the share price.
Yeah, and a couple of things I mentioned on the blog. I mean, it is extrapolating that growth, which obviously can't happen all the time. But I said, even if they do it for the next year, then they will be earning, because they basically, they did 2.8 million the last quarter in revenue. Now, if they double that in every quarter, what's the mass there? Yeah, it's something ridiculous. But I mean, it's almost not far off that 35 million they're trying to raise. And I just think, you know, all you need is one of these in your portfolio to do really, really well. And I'm not saying, I'm not putting my entire life on this. You know, no. I'm just saying this is worth a punt. It could go somewhere. And it's one of these stocks that are sky blue. And ASOS are not, they don't have infrastructure in India. And I'm thinking, if they did want to, what do you think they'd do? Set up infrastructure or just buy coups, which essentially is exactly the same as them, you know?
Exactly. It's a marriage made in heaven, isn't it? You know, once they, you know, coups does the hard yards and basically sorts out the model and gets the model to profitability. And then to scale it up, in comes ASOS, buys the company, and away you go. Although although I would think if ASOS wait too long, then they're going to be paying top dollar for it.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous. I like that pick because I'm invested in it. But listen, everyone, do your own research. Like I said, there's no guarantee this will be anywhere near as big as ASOS. But even if it's half as big, even if it's a quarter as big, you know, I think it's worth taking the chance at this level right now. Like I said, they have cash more than they have. Their cash is bigger than their market cap at the moment, I think. So
it is,
depending
on
how much they spend, of course. Anyway, thanks for that, Al. Speak soon.
Okay, Jess, pleasure. All the best.
That's it for the podcast. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, please do your own research on any stock mentioned, as I do hold a couple of stocks in. So I may seem a little bit biased, you know, and it's hard to detach emotion from money when you're invested. But do your own research there. Okay, on those stocks mentioned in the podcast. I've got to say thank you to Martin John L. for the 5-star rating and review on iTunes. The Vox Markets podcast is a must listen for any investor. Justin's natural and enthusiastic style is a breath of fresh air when compared to other financial podcasts. It's now part of my daily routine. Do you know what? I just like reading these just to give me a bit of flattery, you know, to boost my ego, to massage it. I love that. Thanks, Mart. And listen, I'm now at 123 5-star reviews, and because of that, because of the listener figures in the top 14, ranked number 14 out of 2,000 in the world's 2,000 best podcasts, so I want to get in the top 10. Help me out here. It's a dream. You can make my dream come true, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening. There's more tomorrow. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.